Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello, we're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Deb Wolf, and today we're going to have with us Anthony Benny, and he's got a conscience when it comes to pet care. So before we talk about that, I just thought I'd give you an item I noticed in the news, which really, really, really makes me feel bad about us humans. This is a zoo, and it happens in zoos all over the world, and this is the situation there. The zoo in Indonesia had to isolate an ape, because the people in the audiences kept giving this poor orangutan cigarettes. And now the orangutan is so addicted to cigarettes that he has to go through detox and patches and all sorts of things. And it's a very, very, very common problem. There are four endangered orangutans at the zoo. And there's a 15-year-old orangutan who's been smoking for a decade. So this is really serious. If you're visiting a zoo, don't smoke. You know, put your smoke away. Don't share it. Make sure the butts don't go anywhere. An elephant will pick up a cigarette butt thinking it's a nut, eat it, and then die because of the filter. So you really, really, really got to watch your smoking when you visit the zoo. So that's a really bad example of people behaving badly with animals in the news. And I thought of that, bringing that up today, just because today we have the opposite. We've got Anthony Benny, and he's started the Clear Conscience Pet. So we're going to find out what that's all about. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Thank you so much, Deborah.
Well, what made you come up with this? What got you into this in the first place?
Well, I have a background of about 20 years, it's up to about 20 years now, in animal nutrition. And I spent a major part of the beginning of that process, you know, helping to build a natural pet food company as an independent associate. And what I came to realize was that even though we were making good quality foods, that we were missing a really important part of what I felt as if was the not only nutritional but spiritual element of the equation. And that element for me was, why are we feeding our dogs and cats with animals that have not been treated properly? So in my mind, it was like, wait a minute, we're treating our dogs and cats as family, as well we should. They're sleeping in our beds at times. We have birthday parties for them, buy them gifts. And right. On the other hand, we are not looking at how the animals on the farm are being treated, or we're not looking enough at that issue, not only from a moral standpoint, but also from a health standpoint. And so that started an exploration for me where I went out and started to kind of rebuild my career in the pet products industry. I wanted to work from a standpoint of saying, what does a true clear conscience come from when it comes to feeding our animals? And I realized, at least in my mind, that we were missing the equation of saying, if the animals who are the source of our food are treated well, and not as companions, but treated with respect and dignity, that they will reward us with healthier food, and we will create a more full and complete spiritual sphere between us, our companion animals, and the animals that help to support mankind and have for tens of thousands of years. I felt as if that was the part that had not been talked about, because it's kind of a dirty little secret to say that, you know, the factory farms are the biggest suppliers and some of the overseas sources of the ingredients for pet foods and treats. So I wanted to kind of rewrite the whole piece of that puzzle, start with a blank sheet of paper, and the first words I wrote on that paper were, clear conscience. And so I proceeded to meet ranchers, farmers, studied Temple Grandin's work. And
I know who you're talking about. So for people listening, that's the autistic woman who really, really understands animals and redesigned, wherever she could, the whole slaughter industry to be more humane. I want to bring something up here, because for some people listening, they might be thinking, you know, oh yeah, kumbaya, hold hands, sit around the circle. This sounds very touchy-feely. But there's some science to this, and this is what I just want to maybe get you to comment on. When an animal gets stressed out, freaked out, terrified to its core. A lot of stuff happens in its body. All of a sudden, just like you or I, if you're being chased by someone, all of a sudden your body is full of chemicals. It's full of adrenaline and all kinds of things. And if you have stress over time, say you're in prison and you're beaten or you're terrified or you never see the light of day and you never have decent food, and this goes on year after year, you're a political prisoner, this kind of thing, that would produce all kinds of high steroid levels, cortisol, and all kinds of things in your blood that a normal person having a happy life wouldn't have. So you take these two things in these animals, and they've got all kinds of chemicals in their blood and their bodies. And that's, I think, part of your equation here, right? That's kind of what you're touching on, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, you're right on target. It's not only about how we treat the animals that we use in part of our agricultural world. It's also what we wind up with at the end of that process, and the toxins that will build in the body, not only from the stress levels, as you point out so properly, as well as the substances that we put into their bodies because we're raising them unnaturally. So if you have a 2,000-pound cow or steer that's being kept in a 10-by-10 enclosure and never has interaction with other animals properly, but they're all crammed together, they're going to get sick a lot more often. So we're going to give them antibiotics constantly. Those antibiotics are going to be in their system, and then we're going to eat that meat, and we're going to become immune to those antibiotics, and they won't work for us when we get sick. So that's a big part of it as well.
Do you know what else I noticed in the chicken source of things? They were using so many hormones to make the chickens fatter, plumper, lay more eggs, this type of thing, that children who were eating the chickens and the eggs were starting to have feminine characteristics well before puberty, even the boys. So this is like creepy, isn't it?
Well, it's an example of when you tinker too much with Mother Nature, there's a price to be paid, isn't there? And it's a very multifaceted question, but it comes down to a simple answer. Let's turn the clock back. I know everyone wants to talk about progress, but I don't feel as if factory farms represent progress.
Food may be more plentiful and cheaper, but it's bad for us. So how is that progress? And I keep thinking, as you say, turn the clock back. I think about the Bible. You know, the Old Testament and the many, many, many rules about how you have to let your animals rest one day a week. You have to never, ever eat before your animals are fed, you know, even on the Sabbath. Like, you can't kill the parent in front of the child or the child in front of the parent. All this stuff that, like, when did we forget this?
Yes, it's true. If you look at those rules and certainly in kosher or halal, some of these things point to intuitive ways of being a more responsible steward of our care of animals. And again, that comes back to what Clear Conscience Ted was about, is kind of trying to bring that responsible sense of stewardship over animals as opposed to using them. You know, I don't believe that we own our pets. I believe that we are stewards of their well-being. And I feel the same way about agricultural animals. It's a responsibility. They can't do these things for themselves. So therefore, if we're going to be in a position that we run their lives, we should do it properly.
Okay, so how do you make sure... Oh, we're running out of time here on the first segment. Well, we're going to have you back for a couple more segments anyway. In the next segment, we're going to talk about how you make sure, like, what is it that goes into this food, Clear Conscience Pet, that's different, and how you're making sure that it's not the stressed out, toxic, over-medicated animals and the leavings from the slaughterhouse floor. So we're going to talk about that a little, and maybe grain and gluten-free, why it's important not to give your pet so much grain. I've talked about that before, but that deserves a repeat. All right, everybody, stay tuned to All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Anthony Benny as my guest, and I'm your host, Jeff Wall.
And I love you, and you know that I really do. heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Today we're talking about pet products with a conscience, and I've got another news story for you. This is a bit of a good news, bad news. The bad news is there are still people like this out there. The good news is one of them got caught. So a suitcase full of songbirds has netted a $7,500 fine for a Vancouver man. $7,500. Is that enough? I don't think so. I think that's a slap on the wrist. I think you probably would have made more with the suitcase. I think that's one trip. They maybe have to look at harsher penalties. But he was traveling back and forth from China with songbirds, and they're supposed to be wild, and you're not supposed to do that, and that's what he was doing, and he got caught. So I'm glad he got caught. Guess who caught him? I'm sure you know, because it's on my show. That's right, Detector Dog. A detector dog with the Border Services caught him because, you know, for a Labrador Retriever to spot a suitcase full of birds, I don't think that's too tough. Okay. So we're coming back to the show with Anthony Benny, and we're talking about, well, pet products and feeding your pet without poisoning it. So let's go, Anthony. Give it to us. How do you make sure your pet food is healthy?
Well, the Clear Conscience line is a selection of treats and food enhancers. The food enhancer is called Super Gravy. So we're not doing the daily food part of the diet because we really felt as if the treat part of the diet was where the worst abuses were taking place, because you have a lot of that body part type material that, as you referred to earlier, winds up as it's kind of stuff that's on the slaughterhouse floor and gets scraped together. And I know it sounds a little gross, and it turns into pet treats. So what I wanted to do was, after 14 years in the food part of the industry, when I started Clear Conscience, I wanted to address this really gaping need that we had to improve the treats. So what I did was actually go to meet the farmers and ranchers that were raising their animals properly and make deals with them to buy stuff from them that they weren't really selling before, or they were giving away practically, and making a promise to them, if you'll save this stuff and treat it like human food in terms of the safety and segregating it, freezing it properly, I'll buy it from you, and I'll give you twice or three times as much as you would have been getting from the, you know, from the waste stream, so to speak. And now we're going to have a sustainable model where we're going to help you to sustain your grass-feeding farm by buying things that you weren't getting money for before. So it was about developing a source network and then connecting with local processors in those areas so that we didn't have to do a lot of shipping around and creating a huge carbon footprint to move product all over the place. And that's basically, I mean, to simplify it, it's just finding the right products, generating relationships with the suppliers of it, and working for less money. I mean, you know, certainly my family needs to eat too, but, you know, if you take something that costs a dime and you sell it for a dollar, well, there's a reason that it costs a dime. It's because it was garbage. So we pay a lot more for our ingredients, but we have the clear conscience of knowing that we're buying the right products. And then you wind up with a product that comes out at the end of the process that is clean, wholesome, the animals respond amazingly to it, because I believe that on a spiritual level, and this is going to sound strange, but I'll go ahead and say it, I believe that on a spiritual level, our companion animals understand that they're eating meat that comes from animals that were also treated properly.
And you know what? I don't think that's so strange. When you think that a dog can smell an epileptic seizure coming, they can smell the chemicals in the body that indicate that. They can smell when a diabetic kid's sugar level is off and alert the parents. That same dog knows the difference between a breakdown and a heart attack. It can smell the enzyme in the blood. Why wouldn't it be able to smell all these toxins and everything else we've been talking about in the meat? I mean, why wouldn't it?
That's a great point. And you know what? Thank you for sharing that with me, because that's a really smart way to put it. It's spiritual, but it's also physiological. Our dogs and cats are so smart, and their sense of smell, like you said, is powerful beyond our understanding. And I think that this response that we see, I mean, the letters that we get and the emails are, I've never seen my dog or cat respond to a product like they do to your products. And I've been in this industry for a long time selling very good products. So obviously that makes us feel good because we're getting that kind of response, but it also means we're touching on something that's deeper than we even realize.
Well, I think most people know that when a dog smells spaghetti sauce, it's not smelling spaghetti sauce like we are. It's smelling oregano, pepper, green pepper, tomato, all the little things that make it up. And that's why the guy stealing the songbirds, he may have packed coffee in there, but it's not going to work. The dog still smells songbird coffee. You know, come on. Same with cocaine coffee. The dog is very good at this sort of thing. So it makes total sense to me that the dog would know the difference. And I think sometimes we doubt these things just because we can't smell the difference, you know? Maybe that's why we should have our dogs test our food. If the dog won't eat it, don't eat it, you know?
Yes, that's the very the anthropocentric point of view. We see everything through our own little limited prism, and we just don't realize that there's so much more that's there than that we perceive at the surface level, that's for sure.
Well, one example I think of right away is there was this bull mastiff named Haunch, and I had to give him an award one time back in the 80s, I think it was, or the 90s, I don't know. But he'd save more people than any other dog in avalanches and stuff like this. So he got this big award and a medal and a year's supply of dog food. Big deal for Haunch. Anyway, his record was 80 feet below water, running water, rushing river, he found a cadaver of a person they were looking for. That's his nose, okay? Like, come on. We can't fathom it, really. You know, we really can't. And he wasn't a bloodhound. He was a mastiff. And he wasn't even trained for that. He was supposed to be finding someone else at the time. So, you know, you kind of have to wonder. But, okay, I see here that all your products are grain and gluten-free. And we've been talking a lot about that on the show lately. We've had veterinarians and other experts telling my audience that they believe grain is, like, really, really bad for cats. Cats should never have it. And also not great for dogs. And so I would like to hear from you why you've chosen to go that way.
Well, as a nutritionist, and, you know, I publish a lot of articles and lecture to vet schools on companion animal nutrition. Quite a long time ago, before the grain-free craze really became what it is, and I don't want to call it a craze, it makes it sound like a fad, but, you know, it's simple biology tells you that a cat is an obligate carnivore, which means that the vast majority of their food source should come from digestible meat, and dogs are omnivorous carnivores. So if you're giving these animals a tremendous amount of grain, you're totally going against their biological nature. And if you go against their nature, their body is going to create responses to try to adjust for that. And those responses can be negative, and they can manifest themselves in disease, in hot spots, in poor condition in general of coat and skin. And I always say, look at the outside of your dog or your cat. To get a glimpse into the inside. If your dog or cat doesn't look good on the outside and their coat is flat and greasy and it doesn't have that gloss or softness, you're not giving that animal the proper nutrition. And you find that constantly with high grain and high carbohydrate diets like the grocery commercial type brands. So it's really intuitive, but again, the problem is that our pet food industry in this country grew through the grain industry. Companies like Checker people, I'm careful of mentioning names, they're grain companies, and they decided that the pet food industry was a great way to use their extra product that they weren't putting into cereals and grain products. So we created an industry based on the exact opposite of what our animals need, and it's taken us about 50 years to undo that, literally, because the dominant model of dog food in this country was the grain-based kibble dog food. So the good news is that over the last several years, as the holistic and natural pet food revolution has taken hold, we've kind of step by step, we've tried to take chemicals out of the products, we've improved them little by little, but we've kind of come to this conclusion that, gosh, let's get back to, and we were better off when our grandparents were feeding our dogs horse meat, and that's not a very popular opinion. I'm not looking to do horse meat, believe me. But
I understand. Okay,
they were getting meat, though. They were getting meat,
that's
and
right.
They were healthy and here all the time.
I want to talk about this in the next segment. We'll be back to talk about why your grandmother's dog seems so healthy and so fit and lives so much longer than your dog. We'll be back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
Itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426 or on the web www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Radio, and my guest today is Anthony Benny, and his company Clear Conscience Pet will help you give your dog and cat treats that won't involve all kinds of processed chemicals, hormones, and stuff from China. We never even got to that yet. Why you like American source products? You get something called the Crunchometer. I got to find out about that because that sounds fun. But we were just saying, I noticed my grandmother's dogs, they did all kinds of tricks, and they were really obedient. She hardly ever needed a leash, and there were stories and stories about these little terrier mutt crosses that she'd somehow have follow her home and end up becoming hers. And she fed them scraps from whatever they were eating, which is a pretty simple diet of meat and veg. She probably gave them grains too, though, I would imagine. But you're talking about 15, 17-year-old terriers, never saw a hot spot, hardly ever saw the vet. And then I go to Israel at some point in my life, and I see people there aren't buying processed dog food. They're feeding their dogs their leftover chicken and left ends of their steaks and all this sort of stuff, all the stuff they're eating, basically. They're feeding their dogs like themselves, and eggs and cheese, and their dogs look amazing. And so I come home and think, what's going on here? How come I turn the pet package over, the dog food package, and I read cottage cheese, I read eggs, I read meat, I read these things. Well, why can't I take them from my fridge and give them to my dog? Why do I have to buy it in a bag to feel like I'm doing the right thing, like it's scientifically balanced and it's the perfect recipe? You know, we've kind of been tricked a little, haven't we, Anthony?
Well, I would put it like this. I would say that what has happened is that we took a good idea, which was let's make it easier for people to feed their animals and in a more consistent way. But that was clouded by a big greed motive, which was let's also do that for a huge, huge profit margin. And again, I'm a believer in profit, and we need to have successful businesses in this country. It's very important. But when you take a grain-based product and then you want to make 10 times the cost of it by putting it into little chunks and calling it dog food and throwing some synthetic vitamins in there, you're not actually feeding a dog or a cat. What you're doing is you're basically making a feed that would be given to a vegetarian animal. And our dogs and cats aren't vegetarian. I'm opposed to vegetarian diets for dogs and cats. I don't think that they work, and I don't think that they give them good conditioning. So have we been deceived? I think that we have to take our own responsibility to an extent, but the power of advertising and the media and all that influence over the years of those pedigree and dog chow commercials, and again, nothing against any specific company. I'm just saying that these are brands that have been very, very powerful, and the consumer had the right idea 50, 60 years ago, feeding, you know, the table scraps, if you had a bone or some you know, trim of your meat left over, those dogs were getting closer to their own natural diet. And, you know, you mentioned the behavior issue, and that's one of my pet peeves as well, no pun intended. If you feed an animal, so let's look at dogs, look at a dog on a high-carbohydrate diet. What are carbohydrates, Deb? They're sugar. Carbohydrates are the precursors of sugar in the body,
yeah.
And simple carbohydrates are digested like sugar. So processed flour equals practically almost exactly like using sugar. And now you have these dogs that are bouncing off the walls. They don't have an even energy supply. Rather than converting protein to energy, which is what their bodies are designed to do, we're giving them this fast fuel. I mean, you mentioned you know, this smuggler up in Canada, and then you said, you know, dogs detecting, you know,
yeah, the first.
It's like drugging our dogs. It really is. And you know, it's a combination of taking those high carbohydrate diets. And so you have two things. You're giving them too much of the wrong stuff and not enough of the right stuff. You got to replace those carbohydrates with meat. So, you know, when you talk about grain-free, it's also important for your listeners to remember low carbohydrate, because you can have a product that's free of quote-unquote grains, but it can still have a lot of carbohydrates.
Yes, one of the meals big things, and things. They can get around it, can't they?
Yeah, these days
corn,
there's a lot of diets.
Corn meal and stuff like that.
Pea fiber and things like that. And again, you know, replacing one kind of carbohydrate with another to sell a product. My answer to the whole thing is that our products are ridiculously low in carbohydrates and very, very high in meat and
well,
in
I know
natural meat.
You're in Connecticut, right? So
I am indeed.
Aren't people out that way, some people into hunting deer? Isn't that sort of an area where that would be done?
A bit. I mean, Pennsylvania, and which is you know, pretty close to here, is one of the biggest deer hunting, you know, areas in the whole country. It's a huge sport there, and certainly there's deer hunting here.
The reason I ask is because out here it's pretty popular, and if you're driving along a highway in the country somewhere, you'll see these big signs called game cutting, and that's a place where the hunter goes and he brings his deer, and the person there, that's their business to cut it all into steaks or put it all into whatever packages the guy wants, ground up for ground beef, whatever he's ordered. Now, when that gets done, okay, the animal's totally natural, drug-free, all this, when that gets done, there's a lot of stuff the purchaser doesn't want, mostly the big bones. And the big bones get put in a box in the freezer. And a lot of times, if you just drive up to one of them and ask them, they'll give it to you free, especially if you bring your own box. I'm serious. I've had boxes and boxes of these giant, totally amazing venison bones for my dogs. Now, you never saw a dog as happy as a dog who receives a hockey stick-sized bone to chew on.
That's heaven. That's heaven for a dog. How can you beat that? And that's as natural as it can be, Deb.
Well, okay. So why don't you get your stuff from China? Can you tell our listeners?
Well, here, there's a couple facets to that, but I'll try to simplify it. The about 5 years ago in 2007, as many people remember, we had the most serious recall of pet foods that's ever taken place in this country, and it was traced back to protein additives from China. And it exposed a dirty little secret, another one of those dirty little secrets, that U.S. companies were buying a lot of ingredients from these Chinese sources because of the low cost, and then incorporating them into products without, you know, any labeling. There's no legal requirement that says if you have a Chinese ingredient but you make the product in the USA that you have to say that. So it doesn't mean that there's something evil or wrong about China in and of itself, but the problem is that there's not anywhere near the level of control and oversight over the agricultural industry in China as there is here, and we know that they're very dedicated to have a huge trade, trade imbalance, so that their economy becomes strong and ours becomes weaker. And when my industry was affected by it, I was deeply, it was a personal affront to me. I said, here we are, we're neglecting our own farmers and meat producers by not buying products from them. And then we're making it even worse by buying stuff that now has turned out to be adulterated with a poison from overseas. So now it's coming back again, and there's a huge UN cry right now. And anyone who wants to go online and just, put in the search terms, chicken, jerky, and China, it's becoming a huge firestorm of concern, because there are a lot of animals getting sick right now as we speak. And nobody's really finding out exactly why it's happening, but there are several class action lawsuits. So for me, it's as Yogi Berra says, it's deja vu all over again. And my answer to it is just don't do it. Just don't buy stuff from there.
Yeah, but you know what's hard about that? Okay, now I don't know if it's exactly the same in America, but in Canada, if you look at something like a box of oranges, okay, oranges, citrus oranges grown on orange grove trees, it might say made in Canada. Okay, that's not possible, right? It's not possible. We do not have the climate to grow oranges. It was made in, it was grown in Florida or California, which is fine with me. I'm not worried about that. Or maybe not. Maybe it was grown in Peru. Maybe it was grown in China. I don't know. But it was packaged and kind of moved around a bit somehow in a factory in Canada. So now it says oranges made in Canada. And that happens all the time. And you can't tell anymore. How do you tell?
Yeah, that's the tricky part, and this is where it's going to get a little difficult, because you have to get to know companies, and in this day and age, people say, well, you just can't trust anyone. Well, my gosh, we have to trust somebody. We need to have companies that put their reputation on the line and say, here's what we'll do and what we won't do. And if you follow your own rules, there was a time in all business and industry, and I think that it sadly has passed but needs to be revived, when we could count on companies that manufactured products to always put the interests of their customers first, and that's how they would
become successful.
Anthony,
you've got a company that's doing that. How do people find you? Because we've totally run out of time. Where can they find you on the Internet?
Go to clearconsciencepet.com. That's conscience. C-O-N-S-C-I-E-N-C-E, not conscious.
Okay.
And it'll tell you all about our stuff, tell you where to buy our products. We're available on Amazon. We're available on our own website and in lots of wonderful independent retail stores, and that list is on our website as well. And it tells you the entire story of our product line. And I guarantee...
Well, thank you for joining me today, Anthony. It's been a pleasure. I'm so glad you came.
Thank you so much for having me, Deb.
All right, everybody. That was Anthony Benny for All Pause Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
Is your dog or cat a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no canned waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Save 20% now at supergravy.com. Just enter radio at checkout. Try Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet. Your pet will love you for it.
You're back on All Pause Pet Talk Radio with your host, Deb Wolf. And with me now is Jim Mabry. And he's coming to us to talk about not the front end of the dog or cat, not the cute, adorable little kitty head with its kitty kisses. Nope, we're going to be talking about the back end today. So welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you very much. Okay. With an intro like that, I really appreciate it.
Well, somebody's got to deal with that end, because you know what? The most common problem I have on the radio when I get calls from people with cats and there's a misbehaving problem, most common by far, bar none, always, every market, every city, every year, year after year, the most common call is, my cat won't use the litter box. Honest to goodness. It's not my cat scratches the furniture. That's probably number two. And it's not my cat fights with people or other pets. That's probably number three. It's always, cat won't use the litter box. So will my cat use the litter box if I use your cat litter?
Well, you know, it's tough to run the type of test to determine whether a cat is going to like a litter box. And as you know, so much of it has to do with what's going on in the cat's world. It's not so much as what's going on in my production facility or in my bag of cat litter necessarily. It's how the homeowner, it's how the pet owner is taking care of the actual box and all the behavioral stuff associated with it. But keeping it clean is obviously the first and most important step to making sure the back end stays in line, we could say.
So what's special about your product that keeps it clean?
Well, you have to realize we are actually the company that harvests the clay, right? So we are actually the mining company, and we have what are called sodium bed mines, which are clumping or scooping clays. And there's a lot of companies out there that make a lot of different types of clay products, but ours are the kind that actually make the tight little clumping ball. And, you know, that product's actually only been popular for about 16 or 17 years. You know, traditionally people just used what we call a traditional clay. Just they would fill sand or clay of local source wherever they could get it, wherever it was cheap. You know, farmers would sometimes scoop it out of the ground or whatever. So we have the very kind of the desirable clay, which is the kind that makes the clump.
So it makes a clump or a ball, and then you can remove that, and the rest of the litter stays pretty clean. This also means you can use the kind of cat litter box that I really like, which is they call them self-cleaning. They're made by Omega Paw, and they have a lid on them. And, you know, I've had cat experts on the show who swear that these won't work and your cats will never use a litter box if you get these. But I have four cats right now and one that's decided to come in that I affectionately have named Not My Cat, but anyway, so five, and I have foster cats and rescue cats from time to time, and I don't have litter box problems, but like you were saying, I don't have my litter boxes in the wrong places. They're not beside dryers, yeah. They're not beside furnaces, they're not all together, and they're cleaned a couple times a day, every day, but part of the reason I can do that is I don't really have to get in there and touch it. I flip the thing over, and the clumping litter balls automatically land in this shovel tray. And I pull the shovel tray out and I dump it. And I fill the shovel tray with some clean litter and I dump that. And I put it back together and I walk away. Once a week or once every 2 weeks, I have to get more involved. But that's all I got to do. So I really like clumping cat litter.
Well, yeah, and that's all we have. We don't have any other clays besides that. And you're exactly right. It's all about hygiene. So that clay is so absorbent. And that clay is used in a lot of different industries. You know, cat litter people are actually a little late to the party in terms of using this mineral. But, because it's so absorbent and it grabs the water, it makes that hard little clump. And the whole idea is because you're just simply affecting that little clump, you're not basically fouling the entire pan. And that's the whole concept behind it, and that's why it works in those automatic litter boxes, because you know you just want to grab this little nugget. You don't want it to just make a big wet mess that never can remove the moisture.
Okay, nugget. Now that's a little bit of a sell there.
Euphemism?
I don't know if it's a nugget. My dogs think of it as a nugget. They really want those nuggets. And you know that's a tip too. If you've got a cat litter box in an area where dogs could raid it, that's not good. The cat doesn't like that. You may think, oh, that's self-cleaning. No, that is not what they need. You have to get
that. Yeah, and I don't
cat.
Think, yeah, as good as this stuff is, as natural it is, I don't think you want your dog eating clay.
No, or cat poo. I mean, they have worms in them. So the litter box, if you do have dogs and cats together and the dogs are always busy in there, disgusting, then you're going to kiss them. Nice. No. Get the box up. Because cats are very into the vertical. You know, you'd be surprised how happy your cat will be if you stick up a shelf on a wall, put the box on the shelf, put a ramp up to the shelf. Now your cat has a whole new walkway, a whole new living space that nobody else gets. I mean, sometimes you could do it all the way around, just about a foot below the ceiling in a room. And now your cat, you just doubled your apartment space for your cat. So, and now it's got a place to get out of the way of the dog, too. So that's a good idea. Okay, so does your mom know what you do for a living, Jim?
my parents. You know what? Yeah, they do now. I'm normally the guy at the cocktail party where everyone's talking about what they do, and I stay really quiet. And then eventually someone says, hey, Jim, what are you doing? I go, I make cat litter. And then they all just start laughing. And then it's usually kind of funny, and they want to know what exactly that means. Am I literally in a plant putting it in bags? Not really, but that's what we do for a living. In fact, about a third of everything that comes out of the ground of the clays that we make goes into the cat litter business. And it is a very, very big business. We send it all over the world, believe it or not. The clay that comes out of the U.S. is the most desirable clay in the world. It gets shipped from China to South America to the Middle East.
Where are you? Where is this pit that you're digging at?
Well, there's about four companies that have these type of mines, and they're all in Wyoming. And if you're familiar with the Yellowstone area, most of this clay was volcanic. And so when Yellowstone was erupting back when it was an active supervolcano, these clays were drifting eastward, and they were laying down in these very thick beds. And so anywhere between southern Montana, north central Wyoming, and a little bit of South Dakota, these clays exist. And that's where we get them.
Are there jobs down there? I bet this makes a lot of jobs for people in America.
You know what? And I understand, like, we, you know, we're in the mining business, so we get people that this is not like a coal mine. It's not like a diamond mine. So we're not going deep down into the earth. This stuff is laying at the surface. Often it's outcropped, which means it's sort of sticking out, and it's normally in areas that's been ranched for a long period of time. So normally it's the rancher or the landowner, and this is all high desert, so it's not real productive land. There's usually just grazing. There's maybe a little bit of farming. And, you know, people come to us, and we normally negotiate with the rights to harvest the clay. And actually, we don't even do as much of it as we used to. We let the ranchers do a lot of that so they can control a little bit more of their own destiny, sort of how much revenue they derive from it. And so we go out, and we collect it, and we put it into powders and into granules, and we sell it to all different industries. But when we're done, reclamation is the biggest part of what we have to do these days in terms of we have got to put natural plants, the native plants, back. And this is an area that's been ranched for over 100 years. So it's not very natural, if you know what I mean. It's been altered up from man's use of it. And so we actually we can go back and put lakes and ponds, and it actually makes it far more productive for ranching once we're done with it. So we do a lot of reclamation.
This sounds a lot better than what's happening in a lot of parts of the world. So how do people know they've got your product? We've run out of time. I just have to let people know how to find you.
Well, our company called Benard Performance Minerals, we do a lot of store brands, and we have a brand called Cat Magic, and we have a brand called Fresh and Natural. So you'd see our BPM logo on the back of the bags. So that's about the only way. Or go to the website, look us up. You can see who carries our products.
Very nice. Well, thanks for joining us here today on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Thank you very much. We'll see you.
Okay. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be talking about animal friendships next with Deb Wolf on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy,
I'm your doggy,
and I love you,
and I love you,
and you know that.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Radio, and I'm your host, Deb Wolf, and I've got something special for you now. I'm all excited. My tail's wagging. I was just telling you how they say that the sign of friendship between animals is when an animal grooms another. That's a really good sign that they really love each other and there's a close bond, or when they groom you as well. But I've got someone with me coming to the show for the first time with me ever, Shawn Seneschal, and she's also called the animal signer, and that's because she knows how to read much more than that. She can tell you how to read your animals so they can sign to you. Now, I know when the dog looks at the door, looks at me, looks at the door, looks at me, he wants to go out. When he looks at the fridge, looks at me, looks at the, he wants something from the fridge. I mean, there's some of the stuff we're already picking up on, but we're going to have Shawn join us to tell us what we're missing. Welcome to the show, Shawn.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let us know how what's something we're missing with our dogs and our cats. What's something they're signing to us that we're just not picking up on?
Well, there are many signs. Actually, there's where they hurt, that they hurt. I've taught a dog to tell me where she had pain and turned out to be a tumor. So there are a lot of things that we're missing. But what I really push for people and animals to do together is the animal to learn additional signs that they can give people so that they can tell them more things. For example, if your dog wants to go out but there's no door around or you're in a place that's new, you can teach them a special sign, which means, I need to go potty. You don't have to be near the door. So you can teach them to communicate from anywhere. If they're in the back seat of a car and they're thirsty, they can learn a special sign to tell you that they need to stop either to go potty or to have some water. So there are lots of things.
Okay, I want to stop you right there. So can you tell us those two? What is it? I'm imagining you're teaching the dog a trick. The way I would teach sometimes when I'm working with special needs people, and so the dog has to communicate to the person who can't see or can't hear, I'll teach the dog to signal things. So it sounds like that's what you're doing. So what would the signal be that you would teach a dog to show me that he's thirsty or he needs to go out? These two things you've done already. I'm so into this. Can you tell me what it is?
Yes. The sign we start with, unless the dog can't do it for some reason, the sign we start with is left paw to the left chin, which is very much like the American Sign Language or Coco signing, the gorilla sign language. It's basically left paw to the chin. They do that, and you know they're thirsty. And it's not a move that they often will do on their own. So you know if they're doing it, they're thirsty. Now, my horse, that's a little bit difficult for my horse. So what she does is that she will lift her upper lip in a very special way, which means I want some water. So, you know, she has water as much as she wants, but she definitely knows that. So that's that sign. But once in a while, I'll get a dog that cannot do a particular move. Either they don't have front legs or they're somewhat handicapped. Then we teach them a sign that we work out together. So, and I call that custom signing, special signs for special dogs. So those are two. Going potty, that can differ.
What the
some
sign
dogs...
is, as long as you're consistent, right? You pick something the dog can do that he doesn't normally do, and you teach him to do it when he wants a certain thing. I totally get how to do this. Okay, so number two for going out, what would that
for
be?
For going out, we generally start a certain way. We start with custom signing, where we observe the dog for a while to see what we can see the dog's already doing a little different than usual, and we'll just reinforce that and teach it and focus on that, reward them for doing it, letting them go out, rewarding them when they do finally go potty. So we look for a particular sign. It could be, I know one border collie.
A lot of dogs spin. Or turn around when they want to.
Exactly, but it has to be something they don't do all the time. Now, border collie, she doesn't spin when she's inside the house, only when she's outside chasing something. but when she's inside, if she wants me to open the gate or to go out, she'll basically look at me, spin from anywhere, and I go, oh, okay, you want to go out. All right, let's go. So I know exactly what she wants from any room.
Easy with a border collie. They're keyed up for visible signs back and forth. I mean, they basically read semaphore with the shepherd. This is their thing. But I think all the dogs that I work with, except for maybe the pugs and the bulldogs, they might have a hard time with this. They just have a hard time remembering anything, you know?
Well, you know, you just you have to work with each dog very, very specially. If they're difficult to train, look for something that they're doing already, but then you decide that, okay, this is now going to mean something new.
Exactly.
You work with them. Yeah. Now, you know, when I'm not working with animals, I also work with children who have speech delays, and some of them are autistic and some are not. And, you know, some of the methods we use for both to help them with communication are very applicable. It's the same conditioning principles.
Do you know, when I think about the pug or the Boston Bulldog, oftentimes their thing, the thing they, not the Boston Bulldog, but the regular Bulldog, oftentimes the thing they do that is a trick that people don't realize is they have all these sort of cute faces or poses that they use to get attention. They can be sort of a snuffling. It can be like a certain noise. It can be, and all these things are intended. They are totally intentional. And there's usually three or four of these attention getting tricks they do. Maybe something sort of macho they do around the man of the house, and maybe something adorable they do around the little girl, but they get these little things. And if you always hand the dog water when it does that, it'll stop doing it when it doesn't want water. So it works that way, too. So I totally get what you're talking about. So, okay, we're talking to Shawn Seneschal. She's the author of Dogs Can Sign, Too, and she's at animalsign.com. If you want more.
.org.
.org. Animalsign.org, everybody. So we'll correct that in the feed, animalsign.org. And I'd like to know, what do I teach my cat?
You could teach your cat, I would start with something that they really like. Now, usually for my cats, it was fish and chicken. So you can teach them, and with cats, it's a little bit easier. You can use their front paw to teach them to use, you know, left paw for one food, right paw for another. But what cats really respond well to are little cards, which I'm actually working on producing for people. But little cards that they tap a different card for different things they want.
The card has a picture on it of a fish or a chicken? Seriously?
It can have whatever you want. It can have a picture of something they recognize. It can be a picture of the canned food that has chicken on it if it looks different than the one that has fish.
That's impressive.
It you can even, by the way, do a letter. With my cats, I used a letter to be so that I could do a system, not just a random set of things, but the easiest thing is to use a picture of something they already might recognize, take a picture of it, laminate it so they don't destroy it, and then put them up for them, and then you have to teach them to tap each card. But you can.
So you're talking a photograph, not a drawing. You're saying, like, actually photograph the tin of cat food, laminate it, stick it on a board. Okay, just to be clear.
Yeah, but now you want to photograph it with a white background because you don't want a lot of clutter. You want it to be, there's one thing on that picture. And that's exactly what you're going to give them. So start with food. If it's a toy, if they want to play, they can give you a certain sign for that. Of course, they already have their signs for that. But the wonderful thing about doing all this and teaching these animals and humans to recognize animal signs more is that you start giving them a system, and then they start to realize that you're really pushing the communication, and they will offer up their own communications more and more. And then you can have not just, you know, 5 or 10 different signs. You can have many. So I have.
You know, I find that. I totally find that. Sometimes when I'm visiting a house and I sit down and maybe I'm coming to play with the kids or visit the adults or something, all of a sudden it's like the animals are bombarding me because nobody's listening to them. They're like, wow, you're listening to us. Hey, guess what? Guess what? This is what I keep expecting.
That's right.
And it's like, you know, they're all over me. I need to be like brushed down when I leave because they're just, people are like, why are they all over you? You must smell like animals. Well, kind of, but it's also that I'm listening to them, you know?
Exactly.
They want
to pick
be
up
heard.
On that really
so
well, and they so appreciate it.
So,
you know,
okay,
I even
so
had one.
Go
there
look
were...
for her, animalsign.org. Go look for Shawn Seneschal. And I hope, will you come back to the show? I'd really like to have you back. This is just too short today.
Oh, I'd love to come back. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Shawn. Okay, everybody, I'll pause Pet Talk Radio. So for the next week, be good to your animals and see if you can read their signs. See if you can tell what they want. You can always call me or send me an email and let me know how it goes. Or let me know if you have a pet problem. I'm happy to solve it on the air on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf. Be good to your animals.
And anytime you're